because
as usual, I find that there's a lot to keep me busy with finding things to back up what I believe I've known, but I am one of these people who used to tell everybody, when I've run professional departments, a lot of people like to say, well, you know, I'm educated, I've got the degrees, I've got this, I've got that. We live in a very fluid world where things change, technology updates things. I remember even as a child, it occurred to me, and I had some great conversations growing up Jewish in Brooklyn, New York. I went to congregation on Saturday, junior congregation. We had a great guy who was in college at the theological seminary in Manhattan for Jewish scholars, let's call it. He wasn't ultra-Orthodox, you know, with the black hat and the rest of it. Those are different groups. Everybody has their own way of believing in God and paying him homage and everything else. And we all have to put up with our own conscience, which hopefully we keep in check with something called self-criticality. But I remember talking to him even as a youth, before I was into my teenage years, about the subject of, it sounds funny, technological obsolescence. We have the Bible, the commandments, the teachings of prophets and people over the ages that try to pass down to us rules and things of how to live and get along with each other. Religions are a certain organized, codified way of doing things before we had regular man-made laws, let's say. And we had man-made laws by someone who was in charge. In the early days, the guy who was running the cave we may have lived in was the guy with the biggest club and the strongest or fastest reactions who'd beat anybody else up. So we change over time, and we try not to hopefully settle things, although the majority of our past history over hundreds of thousands of years have been determined by conflict with one another. Conflict may cut down the population, may leave more for each of us, but we end up obliterating commandments. You know, thou shalt not kill. We make ourselves feel good that we do this because, well, we had to. These people were a danger to us or something. Humans are great at justifying things. What we have to be greater as is understanding each other, that we're all on this planet together. We all have differences in the way we look or feel or sound because of where we grew up, what foods we ate, what water we drank. The color of our skin, even, again, is based on the areas where we grew and our interaction with the sun and other elements that change the way we look. We have to be cognizant of these things nowadays and not waste our time on silliness, because the thing that's made this nation great, which I've discussed, is the diversity. People came here to get away, generally, from authoritarian governments and people. Yes, there were people who came here to discover, you know, Columbus didn't have the money to buy his own ships. He went to Queen Isabella and he said, hey, I'm going to bring you stuff back from this new world. I'll find the shorter route, bring you spices. You can enrich your treasury and blah, 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 blah. So we're always selling something or to ourselves or other people. Technological obsolescence, as I discussed it when I was a child with this senior individual who was on a doctoral level in college at that point with our junior congregation, I said, hey, we didn't understand what the differences were between mixing milk and meat. We didn't understand about trichinosis and ringworm. We didn't have microscopes thousands of years ago to discover what bacteria were. So basically, we developed things by what we saw happen to humans when they ate certain things or did certain things. And we tried to say, for your health and your survival purposes, not to do those things. Then we live in a more refined age where we hope we can deal with laws and the rest of it. And I think about all of this because, as I said, when we waste our energy and our time because our neighbor looks different And you know what? I've had plenty of neighbors throughout my life that I didn't like. But you know what? I always felt that my service to the government or to humanity was that I am willing to make sure we all have the opportunity to live free and do right for our community, our country, whatever. I don't have to like what they like, but I also don't have to impose on anybody what I think they should be doing. We have to work together and cooperate. That's part of how we move forward. That's why I have this Make It Happen. I try to summarize things in as simple a way as possible. I've realized from all my readings that making a point is not a large speech or anything else. It's being able to get a point across, to make it recognizable to people. Now, everybody sees things differently, so it isn't always the same words. I got to learn this more so when I traveled to many different countries and worked with people, different backgrounds and cultures, that if they spoke my language, which made it easier for me because I didn't speak theirs, they learned it out of a book. So they were looking at the definition of a word, as I've said many times in my life. Every word has more than one meaning. We can all play with it and decide we all know what it is. If everything was settled, we in the United States would not be the most litigious society in the world. We have more lawsuits going on and conflicts legally with each other because we all feel we have a different viewpoint, perspective on what occurred. So if, you know, you got 10 commandments, said thou shalt not kill, you kill somebody, well, you should be punished. But then there are circumstances. Well, he was hungry, he was mad, he was deprived, his mother beat him, whatever. And I don't mean that against motherhood or anything else, just using it as an example. So pardon my rambling, but we're going to go through because the topic for today, you know, it's always hard to summarize in a short bumper sticker what I'm going to talk about. And as I've seen on a lot of the shows I watch, and I try and watch almost everything, so I get all viewpoints because in case I miss something or don't note something, and the people giving it have different perspectives. Their teams that put together the show for them have different perspectives. So I personally like listening to everybody, whether they're an enemy, a friend, anything else. I want to be informed of what they're thinking and why. And hey, if I understand what they're thinking and I recognize maybe what they're missing or I'm missing, we can come to a common ground where we don't have to annihilate each other to live. We don't have to subjugate one another to feel happy. And, you know, we can't cure all problems, but we at least should be able to approach them. So, Memorial Day weekend, I'm a firm believer in remembering everybody who came before us. They generally look at it for those who've served our country. And again, I've served and would, as I've said before, would serve my country no matter my age in a heartbeat if it needed it. I believe that's what gives me this country, the ability to be free and do things within the laws and the rest of it. I'm always willing to pay for with my service. And that's why somewhere around there, universal service, doing things, taking some time off to volunteer. I made some of the kids I raised and hopefully trained decently. I made them when they were younger, so they'd understand maybe what they had was a little better than other people and to recognize the different parts of life. I dragged them to some different countries when I traveled so they'd see differences. Not that those countries were better or worse than us, but different. But I also made them volunteer at hospitals as a candy stripe by helping, because they did allow some youngsters, if they were capable, to work in hospitals, to aid, so they'd see what happened with victims in emergency rooms, and they'd say, wait a minute, how'd this guy get here? Did he drive stupidly? Was he on drugs, drinking, or whatever? We all learn through interaction. Human beings, I have found a basically very tangible, what they can see, smell, touch, that they can recognize. It's the intangibles, the concepts, the laws, the written words that they'd say, well, what does that mean to me? I didn't have a chance to stop and read that. So that's why even though we have tons of laws and tons of lawyers, we have tons of cases. Everybody's got a new little perspective on what's going on. One of the organizations I wanted to mention because it started many, many years ago, 1985. It's called RAM, RAM, not the truck, not the car company. It stands for Remote Area Medical. It's a volunteer corps. It's a volunteer corps of doctors, nurses, veterinarians. They started it. It was an Englishman in 1985 who used to work with a guy that a lot of people may not know about unless they look back. In the old days, one of the insurance companies, Mutual of Omaha, used to have this guy, Marlon Perkins, and I'd know on certain mornings I could see him taking us around, showing us animals that I might not get to see, although we did have some interesting zoos in New York City as a big city. So this guy saw the need for people who had this, and he did it first internationally, but then it didn't take long when he started doing it here in the United States. And he's been doing it for a long, long time. In fact, in 2018, they completed their 900th clinic in Knoxville, Tennessee. They do it throughout the country. In 2017, their clinic hosted over 1,000 volunteers and served over 2,300 men and women. People look at third world countries and think about how poor they are and deprived and the rest of it. I remember when I was younger and reading old papers and stuff that there was an area, I'd have to go back and look at the name of it, but even around Washington, D.C., before it was all built up and we had all the modern interstate highways, in the old days, there was some of these hill countries and back countries that we kind of look at as hillbillies. They're not hillbillies, they're just people who live in a different environment than we do. And, you know, you see the stories about moonshine and the rest. They're more farm and rural people, and I've lived with such people and have experienced them. But there was one that was within 50 or 100 miles of Washington, D.C., that if you'd look at it, it was as poor as any place on the planet. The people didn't necessarily feel they were poor because they planted and grew things and harvested and made what they needed. They built their shelters. The wood around them supplied the materials they needed. So, you know, poor is a relative term. But in this day and age when things cost money and we've got these big companies supplying stuff, you need a certain amount of money to exist. You're within a community that you have to work within it. You can't just go off to Central Park and map out a little piece of lot and say, I'm going to put my tent up and live here. So the interaction and growth of our population have changed a lot. But this organization, RAM, you could look them up. They've been doing phenomenal things, including there was legislation in 2017 at our federal level to provide $1 million that said to our states, remember, our states are autonomous governments, that said these people are not going to open up shop in your state or your city and compete with your doctors and nurses. So you needed a bit of dispensation to allow them to take care of it. You'd think that if you're going to do something for free to take care of people, it would be okay. But you've got people who say, wait a minute, you're competing with my business. Okay? I mean, think about it. If you just built an auto laundry, you invested your money in it, and then there's a bunch of children out there with a parent watching them where they're holding signs up, car wash today, and they've gotten somebody to allow them to use a hose, that may cut down on the revenues that this man who invested his money in that car wash in that area will get that weekend. Everything has its trade-offs. So we're going to look at a bunch of things because there's so much going on. And I called today leaderless ship with a question mark. In the old days, when I was growing up, they talked of the ship of state, meaning how is our government doing? It's an old term. I don't know if many people have heard of it in years. So when I look at things, I try and understand what they're doing. And as I said, I will do the research. I will not just tell you that I have an opinion. I have an opinion based on facts that I can find. And I'll tell you if I can't find enough facts. So that shout out to the man who started RAM. He's a British guy named Stan Brock. I don't know if he's still alive or anything else. But he's been featured on 60 Minutes and other things. And he's not alone. There are tons of humans. One of my bumper stickers was, humanity ain't always humane. How we treat other people is how we envision that we want to be treated. If it bothers us, sometimes there are people who have no conscience. That's why we have laws. That's why we have jails. There's another guy, John Boyd, who was the founder and president of the National Black Farmers Association. Very successful farmer. He set this up because, hey, in the old days, they didn't always want the black farmers in with the white farmers. And I can tell you, historically, if you do your research and find out that as the Africans were in our society from when we first came to this country, well before our country was founded, they came from a society which was the earliest, basically, which was more agrarian, farm-like. So passed down to them were a lot of these skills that we needed to make the land yield things. So when they could, they just didn't want to be bothered if they can go sit in the corner and do their thing and feed their family. So this man, John Boyd, was the founder and president of the National Black Farmers Association. Very successful farmer. And a lot of the times, the white farmers in the old days didn't want them in their association. Stupid, rather than sharing things and understanding how they're done, which we try and do nowadays. So there's a lot of things going on, and I want people to understand that there's a book that I can recommend that was a bestseller many, many years ago by a man called Joseph Heller. He was a pretty popular writer way back. And he wrote a book that had the interesting title of Catch-22. Okay, he had to put his label on that book to decide how to catch your attention. And it was, believe it or not, about World War II and the interaction of people. Not just people fighting the war and arrest, but some of the people who were in it for their own personal gain, how they did things. It's a riotous book, but it's not so off the facts when you look into it. Because there are people who do profit off of wars. People who sell armaments. People who sell food when there's a scarcity. In fact, if you look into our history, you can Google and check of war profits taxes. And I believe it started with the First World War, where we said that we don't want people to take advantage of society. So it's okay in a time of crisis that you make some profit, but let's not go crazy. Let's not charge people where they can't afford to eat or live. So Catch-22 had a guy named Major Major. Again, he was trying to be cute, but he tried to show how he did things, how he progressed. If you want an interesting book, you want to look at this. And it deals with, among other things, subsidies. We have, going back in our history, something called, and I'll be jumping around a little bit because there are a lot of different things that cross over each other. There was something called the Agricultural Adjustment Act. Okay? This was way back during the Depression. Franklin Roosevelt in the 30s had to do some of the things. What they wanted to do was WPA, Work Progress Administration, put people to work. Humans generally don't feel good about standing on a bread line and getting some soup and a piece of bread. So if they could get that and feel they've done something to pay for it, they feel a little better about themselves. So when they put people to work, building a lot of, and throughout this country, there are many of them. If you go back, you could probably Google bridges built during the Depression. And when I say bridges, I'm not talking about like the Verrazano, the Golden Gate. I'm talking about these small bridges that allowed you to cross a river, a creek, to get from one county to another without driving 200 miles when your child was sick, to go to a central hospital. That was the only place you'd find a doctor. So they built things that were to our benefit, that made people feel good, that we supplied the materials and the rest, and they supplied the labor. This was when America actually got together in ways that a lot of people don't understand. And they used people who were artists. You see it in bigger cities like Radio City Music Hall or Rockefeller Center in Manhattan, where they did a lot of murals. That was part of what they used some of the artists to do. So they tried to find jobs that everybody felt they were contributing to our society. Remember, I keep telling you, forget the people who have millions and billions. There's nothing wrong with that. I totally believe in free enterprise. I love my country. But those people do not own the country. They have a lot of power. But the reason that they get to exercise it more than we do and we feel, well, we can't compete with them, is because we fail to understand that every human has one vote. So if we've got, out of the 300 plus million people here, 200 million of them that are of voting age, you keep the value of your ownership of that one share of our country. Remember, I've told you, it's currently worth around $200,000. You want to protect the value. It's your value. It's been handed down to you by your ancestors, your forebears, people who came here and cut down the trees, started the early roads. So voting is how you take care of that. And you don't want to wait till that final big election, because when you get to that final big election, let's remember again, as I've tried to point out to everybody, at that point, if 10% of the people came out in the primaries and voted for two or three people that they were interested in, those are the only people that moved forward to that final election. So you only get to choose out of the few people that that small group voted on. So if only 10% of the people come out. So this is where a lot of people don't understand that I think Trump is smarter and understands it. If he has 30% of the population who loves him enough that whatever the hell he does, they're going to come out and vote, you're going to say, well, that's a minority. Yeah, that's a minority, but if they come out in the primaries and vote, their candidates will be the ones that move forward. Those candidates are going to be the only ones you have to vote on at the end because they won the primaries and moved forward in a contest. People watch these basketball games and baseball games, and they have eliminations. They go through the, you know, Sweet 16 and whatever they call the rest. I'm not a big sports fan. I generally understand, and they match them up till you get to the finalists. But people watch it from the beginning. From the beginning, we get to choose who survives those initial confrontations. If we don't, the small group that comes out all the time are the ones who are giving you the people that you may hate when you have to vote for the president or vote for the Congress. As I said, there are no midterm elections. We just add a presidential election every 4 years to what we do every 2 years. Every election's important at your state and local level. What happens in your city? So, exercising your right to your ownership outstrips whatever money anybody wants to spend. They could put all the false ads you want. Look up the person. Look up their record. Get out in the first primary and vote. You'll see a different group coming forward. We're not going to always be right, but we won't be stuck with the same group that this small part of our population ends up pushing forward, and we don't really have a choice except whoever they've put in that pot for us to vote on. So follow me. Voting in every election on the way to that final is what's really important. That's exercising your ownership rights of the country. So these subsidies that these acts put out under Roosevelt and the rest during the Depression, they said, we don't want people putting stuff, crops dying in the field, and then depressing prices when we're trying to rebuild the economy. So they started giving subsidies not to plant all of your fields, not to overproduce. We have people who are trained, who know what the yield of it is, planting it and the stuff. We don't want to waste money on seed and water and energy to produce crops that are just die because we've overproduced. And back then, we weren't shipping it all over the world as much. So subsidies were done to kind of control what we spent our money on, okay? Because the federal government does step in, and at the state level too, where they step in to try and help us manage the economy without being against anybody's personal business, but for the common good of the country. That's where you got these agricultural adjustment acts, and the subsidies. And I know everybody has heard by now, there are people who have gone out and bought a piece of land because they know it qualifies as farmland, and they know they're never going to farm it, but they put in for the subsidies. We need to revisit this. We are not in a depression. We shouldn't be giving people who just bought a piece of land money to help them pay for the land they bought because they're never going to farm it. So we need, as I said, technological obsolescence. We progress. We know more. In this day and age, you don't have to be fooled by a ridiculous commercial. I know I've had people show me that they could take my picture and put it in some sort of easy program that's out there on the internet and make me look like a kitten or a tiger or a gazelle or whatever. And I see people who like posting pictures of themselves when I do go on the internet, where they have a cute little bunny nose or a couple of whiskers. Well, that's funny, but it's not funny when it's used to persuade you to look at a person as incompetent. That's what's been happening. I've always grown up with the appreciation of women. Men need to be appreciated also, but women, they not only have children, men do too. We don't bear them, we help raise them, we help make them develop. But there's a big difference between Trump and Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is the mother, I think, of five children, and she has nine grandchildren. But the difference is, she didn't just have children, she raised them. Donald Trump has gone around and had children with different people. It doesn't matter. I have nothing against that. But I've always invested in any child, including some that were not my own, because I've said before on my podcast that the children are our major asset. We want to make sure they have opportunity, so we benefit from it. We don't want them falling down and ending up in jail. So there are a lot of things we're starting to look at differently that we're looking at because of artificial intelligence, minimum wages, the rest of it. We'll get into that. So the subsidies, Trump put these tariffs on because if you go back and you review him in the 80s and 90s, he always had these simplistic answers. He does not really understand economics that well. He understands pressuring people. He understands trying to negotiate hard and walking away from a table because it's a building. So it's one building. No matter how big or small, it's not going to hurt the country. Well, this is a country we're running. We're not running a business. You don't get away from the table. You don't say, "I don't like you and I'm not going to play with you." You don't do as he did the other day and say, "I'm taking my marbles home and I'm not going to do anything till you stop investigating me." If he has nothing to fear and he believes what he keeps saying, let them do it. If they come up with nothing conclusive, we, the public, can vote them out the next time around. If they come up with the information and show it to us, because again, people aren't reading that 500-page report, 440-whatever pages Mueller wrote, and I'm waiting for Mueller to testify, and I'm going to get into something about him that I had to read to assure myself of how he thought and what I think about what people are talking about. So subsidies. Trump had put these subsidies on. Now remember, China, as I've said, I've dealt with it from the day they opened their country and started needing technology to open up plants and do it. I told you a company I worked for, we sold them a set of books on how to build a coal-fired plant. It was the quickest and easiest. And that's why they have all the pollution they have. But the pollution doesn't only remain in China. They may be wearing face masks in Beijing to breathe, but it ends up circulating and causing us all issues. So they built their economy. So people who ran companies decided, okay, maybe 150 years ago, I moved from New York to North or South Carolina to manufacture furniture or clothing because I could have cheaper labor. As the world grew and planes and technology changed, they said, wait a minute, I can move my manufacturing off to China and get the same thing made for less. They didn't necessarily pass that savings on to us. They said, I'm going to show a bigger profit. My stock's going to go up. That doesn't necessarily help us because they deprive us. I've talked to you about taxes before. We could always discuss it again. We pay every cost of any operating company. They pass all those costs on to us, the consumer. As I've said, in this current economy, we, the 98% of us who are not multimillionaires and billionaires, spend at least $14 trillion a year. And embedded in that are taxes that we've paid, they haven't. And all of those taxes that we reimburse them for or pay for, separate from their profit, should go into our treasury. We need to understand that. They made our income tax withheld so it would go into treasury, so we wouldn't have to borrow as much. So we live in a society where we're all connected one way or another. So the subsidies, Trump put these tariffs on. Think about it. China ships a lot of goods here because we're making them there instead of making them here. So we've got a lot more coming this way. That's the imbalance he talks about. Well, we created the imbalance by manufacturing offshore, but still almost charging the same price even though we're making more profit. And then we're not paying taxes on it, even though we've collected the taxes in the price when we estimate how much we would owe if we have to pay the taxes. Crazy world, but it's just a matter of understanding the flow. Follow the money, as I think it was Cuba Gooding in one of his movies said, and other people have repeated. Anyway, the subsidies. So what Trump has done, he puts these tariffs on. Well, the tariffs are a tax, period. The consumer who buys the goods that are sent here from China, we the people pay that tax. If the company selling us that good or service wants to eat a piece of it against the deferred taxes that they have, which are profits they don't need, that's why they can absorb some of it. As I said, they don't put the taxes they charge us, all of it in our treasury. They keep them as extra profits if they can forever, and we have to borrow more money to run our government. Crazy, but that's what happens. I haven't had a chance yet to finish that position paper that I want to send to a couple of papers and things like The Economist, The Nation, and some other ones. Hopefully somebody will read it and understand it. It's our money. It should be in our treasury, not additional profit for them to play with and maybe never pay over into our treasury. So subsidies. Trump is making us, because of the tariffs, we the people are paying these tariffs on goods coming here. China puts on tariffs on goods shipped from here. So let's look at the difference. We aren't suddenly manufacturing those goods. So China is sending these goods from the companies we sent there, where we showed them our technology. They didn't have to steal it. They could just copy it. They were more or less lawless. Try suing a whole government, whether it's a state or local government or anything. So anyway, we're paying all these tariffs that Trump put on us. He's taxed all of us for what we consume on a regular basis coming out of China. Those taxes go into our treasury. Now, think about it. This man, when he had a whole Republican Congress over a year ago, passed a tax cut. And everybody likes tax cuts, except 90% of it or more went to that less than 1%, including his family on certain types of taxes, income, estate, the rest of it. Didn't benefit us, but guess who makes up the difference? We do. So now he has a shortfall in the treasury. He puts these tariffs on and he says he's getting tough with China. No, he isn't. He's making us pay for the greedy people who took this manufacturing over to China. Instead of saying, hey, guys, we want to make it in the U.S., you pay a little more, and it supports your own country. Not a big concept to talk about, but why bother if they can make more profit? Greed, it's a terrible thing. You can go to even any Bible class and hear about it. So anyway, he's got these taxes that we pay, and it goes into the treasury, and he wants to be voted in again, so he wants the farmers, because now, what do we export? We export to China less than we import from China. What do we export? Soybeans and stuff, and soy products, pork. Those are two major things, but a lot of things, farming-type things. China's got a big population. They'll build up their farms, but we supply a lot of stuff. So when China puts on tariffs to get even with us, guess what happens? China doesn't need it because we're buying their products. They're making a lot of money. The tariffs that they're imposing upon things from here, we don't ship to them. The tariffs imposed on what they ship to us, they keep shipping because we don't have it here. We need to get it from them. We don't manufacture it. We can't replace it that easily. So he makes us pay taxes, that's what a tariff is, that goes into the treasury. And now the farmers who are hurting, because he's promised them he's going to do all sorts of great things. Any man can promise. I hate to say this, when I was a kid, I remember, you can get really basic about it. Everybody, when you're young and wanted to find out what the other sex was or somebody you were interested in, you tried to promise them, oh, no, I love you, I'll do this, I'll do that, just to, you know, get somewhere in this world. Have some interaction, enjoy yourself, because as a kid, this was great. We're going to enjoy sex. And you promise them, oh, no, I'm impotent, or I have devices to keep us from getting pregnant, whatever. People lie about things. He's lying about what he's doing, and we're paying the bill because he has a shortfall because he gave away technically trillions of dollars. That's why our deficits are going up. He yelled about the deficits. Remember, the same man yelled that Obama knew that the Russians were doing this. He should have taken action. My legal friends, again, I'm not an attorney. I've worked with them all over the world, and I love the law. And it's important that we have laws, rules, and regulations. But it's something called, fancy term, admission against self-interest. When he says that Obama should have done something about Russia interfering in our elections, Obama talked to Putin about it. It's in because he had note takers. He had a certain openness, so there are recordings of what he did. Okay? Trump goes over and speaks to Putin. He says, well, Putin told me he didn't do anything, so I'm going to disregard all of my intelligence agencies. Think about what you're looking at. A man who said he's going to represent us, take care of us, and who's he really taking care of? Somebody who's offered him a deal where he can make a few hundred million dollars if he builds a building in Moscow or somewhere in Russia? So the subsidies that he's giving the farmers are the taxes he's charging us on the products China is shipping here that we can't stop because we can't replace them. Now, China, when they put the tariffs on, they don't care if they're collecting tariffs on our products. Our farmers can't sell our products because they're not competitive, okay? So they got to cut back. So he doesn't want to lose the farm vote, so he takes the tariffs that we paid that went in our treasury because he's showing China how tough he is. He's taking those dollars that came out of our pocket, handing it to the farmers so they don't go out of business because he's screwed them over with their competitiveness on a global economy. Now, when it comes down to it, when it comes to soy and pork and other products, we are not the only country that can manufacture this stuff. Brazil is one of the countries who has taken up the slack. They have a country to run and a budget to take care of. So they're selling more soy and more pork, and so are other countries. The man doesn't understand economics and analysis. There's nothing wrong with checkers versus chess, and I don't consider that chess is a more difficult game. I could make an argument that checkers is a more difficult game because every piece on that checkerboard can move in almost any direction compared to specific moves that you can only have with certain pieces on a chessboard. So people think of chess as more complicated, more highbrow. No, they both are strategic. Just it's like having different weapons. So Trump gets in, and because of his hatred that you saw before about Obama and what he did, and he's a phony, appealing to very basic instincts of racism, he gets in and he kills the TPP. Now, the TPP was constructed. I can tell you, I've dealt in international business the majority of my life. I've been trained in economics. Not a professor. It's one of my majors, though. And I've had some great teachers, and I read and understand, and I've practiced these things. What happens is the TPP was designed to bring all the other countries on a Pacific side, which we are a Pacific country. We've got a whole Pacific coast, in case anybody forgets, other than China, to work with us so that China isn't as powerful. He says, no TPP. He opens the door for China to make deals with every one of these countries, taking away a bargaining chip. So you tell me how smart he is. Is he too stupid to understand what it was going to do? Or he just doesn't care because it had somebody else's name on it? It hurts us when he practices his bravado of trying to show he's the best and he wants to put his label on. Remember, this NAFTA was terrible. During the 2 years that he had a total Republican Congress, did he get something passed to replace NAFTA? No, he finally worked something out. But even if the House votes on it, the Senate isn't taking it up to discuss it. They're happy just getting judges for the rest of our lifetime that are conservative and will change the way we view laws. So you got to look at what's doing, what the man has said and what he does. Same thing with Mexico, where, you know, they're going to pay for this. Don't worry, I'm the big man. I'm going to make them pay. Then he says, well, I'm going to make them pay through this agreement. Well, the agreement's not in place. Mexico's not paying for it. We are paying for it. He keeps trying to take funds away from other things. He's got certain appropriations in there right now that are taking tons of money out of plans that we need that aren't going to happen because he wants to build his wall. He wants to leave his monument. I hate to say this, the only monument I would donate toward a headstone for him. So anyway, so subsidies, because of what's happening on the farming and the rest of it, are not what you see. HUD, we recently saw Ben Carson. He was testifying. The man may be the most brilliant brain surgeon the planet has ever seen. And I've dealt with people who are brilliant at what they do. Some of them, who I know have high IQs and are very capable of what they're able to do that maybe nobody else can do. And you pay them for doing that. But some of them, I wouldn't even have them change a light bulb. They would have problems doing it. It's the wrong person to do it. He was at a couple of hearings. It's been all over the television. He didn't even know what they were talking about when they said an REO, real estate owned. He thought it was an Oreo. He always looks like he's half asleep. And I guess Trump hasn't decided to call him sleepy. Because he put him in there. It looks good for him and whatever. Man is not serving us well. He wants to now, on the housing and urban development, we've had plans for years to take care of the poor we have here. And we have tons of poor, working and non-working. Forget welfare, just keeping them off the streets, giving them shelter. Children that are with them, that are our children, as I've explained. He ends up deciding that they want to kick them out because maybe you've got a family where they've been here for 20, 30 years and the mother is an illegal alien or the father or both, but they have three, four children that are all American citizens and they're living in subsidized housing. They want to kick them out because they would allow if one person was not, because you're not going to separate a family the way we think as good human beings. Well, now he's deciding, let's reverse that rule. If there's even one person living in there, let's kick him out. I have dealt with these housing issues over the last 40, 50 years. and we can separately talk about low-income housing, Section 8 housing. There's reasons we do this, but the bottom line is those housing units are coveted by some of these investors. They would love to kick people out of low-income housing because you know what? Over the decades, we've built low-income housing in many downtown areas that are now surrounded by new neighborhoods. And that property is worth a ton of money. If they could kick the people out of them, take it off the government program, and use it and convert it to condos, they would. If you're a millennial and you want to live downtown and be part of the crowd, don't move to those places. Be progressive if that's what you think of yourself as. Be knowledgeable. Look up these things. And don't take over something where they're just trying to make a profit off of you and put some other people out on the street. Now, back to what's going on with the president and the indictment and the impeachment and the rest of it. He's been saying his side, and in the meantime, he's got an attorney general who has not served us well because the attorney general is our attorney, not the president's. Forget that he gets to pick them. You've had this letter that's been written after what Mueller did with his four-page thing and everything after, and I mean what Barr did, and then Mueller protesting it. You've had now almost 1,000 former prosecutors from both Republican, Democrats, Independents sign this letter saying, hey, there's more than enough evidence that any of us, the worst of us, could impeach him or indict him with the evidence that's in that report. So they're up to almost 1,000 former major prosecutors from all walks of life, Republican, Democrat, white, black, pink, doesn't matter, who have said that Trump would be indicted if he were not president. So you get back to, and then the president, and I'm going to get, saving one for last that really has been torturing me for a while, and I realize it was my own fault that I haven't really read this thing. It had no relevance to me before because I can't read everything with the hope that it's going to come up tomorrow and I'm happy I read it. The president is now with Julian Assange, even though they don't, even if they can't extradite him and get him here. What you do is when you've got a war criminal, just as Bob Mueller indicted all those Russians who hacked into our system and interfered with our election in 2016 because they could trace them back to the keystrokes and the person doing it. Between 20 and 30 of them, he had them indicted. In law, they call this in absentia. They can't get you brought here. Russians not going to release them and send them to us so we can indict them and throw them in jail. So in absentia means you're absent, but we got a case against you. We present it, and we get you indicted. If you ever show up, we can throw you in jail. Great. So remember, Mueller approved that thing. He indicted them. They're not the president. So he has yielded more than almost any other special counsel, whatever, under Clinton, under Nixon, has ever done. It's been worth what has been spent. We're just not dealing with what it showed us, and our president's doing nothing about what could happen to our next election because we haven't taken the right attitudes. And you even see the heads of the intellectual cyber warriors who protect us and do these spying and everything else. So the president likes to subvert news words. So he gives Barr permission. And what do they do with Assange? They normally would go after him under what's called the Espionage Act. But they said, why bother? Let's use him for another thing. What did they use him for? They're trying to indict him under something that says, well, if you took something that you didn't necessarily steal, but you got your hands on it and you published it, we can indict you. That's why you're hearing in the last few days, if you are paying attention to the various news reports, that this is scaring the freedom of speech of all reporters, papers, magazines, cable channels, because Trump has said, they're the enemy, as any authoritarian dictator would say. Let me tell you this. If he goes forward with the Attorney General trying to prosecute any one of these reporters or newspapers or the rest of it, he's prosecuting himself, because during the campaign and after, but definitely during the campaign, he reached out to Russia, to WikiLeaks. We've got the tapes. We can replay them anytime we want. If you've got this information, you'll be mightily rewarded. Send it to us. So he got John Podesta's emails. He got other pieces of information that he released under his campaign. He broke the law he's trying to use to suppress the freedom of speech of reporters. I hope the reporters think about this enough and understand that he is setting himself up for indictment. And again, you can indict a president. You just can't throw him in jail necessarily while he's in office. When he comes out, you can then throw him in jail. So let me leave that, and I want to go back and close on one thing that really has been bugging me. Robert Mueller, who's a very bright guy, who's held a lot of great positions and has served our country well, and I consider him an intellectual, patriotic warrior. The man has issued a report, and a lot of what they're talking about is there is this opinion of the Office of Legal Counsel of the Department of Justice. Now, let me remind you, an opinion is not a law. I can give you my opinion. You'll say, okay, well, that's what you think. But because he was operating under the Department of Justice, he's got to kind of follow the in-house rules. You know, like when you play poker at your house, deuces can be wild or whatever it is in the card game you're playing. I hate to make reference to card games. A lot of people don't play them nowadays. But you have house rules. The Department of Justice has this opinion. I got it the other day, and I've been working my way through it. And let me say, you've got a president who's acting as what the polite reference is, a unitary president, meaning he doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks or what any other part of the government does. So he's not doing or running the office in a normal way. Well, I hate to say it. When you read through the opinion, these opinions of whether or not you can prosecute a president gets down to you don't want to destabilize the presidency and a whole bunch of other things. It's a lot of technical, but I urge you to go out and go on the internet and get it. And as boring as it may seem, read through it. They try and say that he's immune from the process, but one of the quotes that I picked out of this thing was, they said, and this goes back to old English law and the rest of it. Remember, we are not under British law. We do not have a monarchy and a parliament. The innovative provision was the specified process of impeachment extending even to the president. Finally, the historical evidence bearing on whether or not an implicit presidential immunity from judicial process was thought to exist at the time of the founding was ultimately not conclusive. There is no immunity from prosecution. When you get into it, part of what they're saying is, remember, the whole country, technically, forgetting the electoral system and the rest of it, the whole country elected the president. So if you took him into a normal court and you gave him a jury, you'd have 12 people deciding whether all of us voted right. So 12 people become very powerful. But again, remember, at the beginning of this, I told you that 10% who goes out and votes in the early primaries are very powerful because they move people forward that we're left with as our choices, because we were too lazy to go out in the primaries and vote for who we wanted to see at the end. So we often get what's left over on the plate from those people who know how important it is to get out in that primary election. Think about it. It's your duty. It's your obligation. We can't bitch and moan about what we end up with if we don't get off our ass and vote from the beginning. It may not be your candidate who wins, but you've expressed yourself. And the more people who come out, Then this small group that they say, well, he only has 30%. But if that 30% goes out and votes from the beginning, he's going to get what he wants. Because we don't go out and we sit home and say, oh, there are enough people who are going to vote. She's going to win anyway, was the thing with Hillary. He understands how people act. We have to understand how we act and say, let's not give him a pass by not voting at the beginning for who we like and why. And I don't care who you vote for. But get yourself up and go out there and vote from the first primary election all the way up to that last vote. So, again, what they were discussing when you get into the woods and wording is you're not going to have 12 people decide what happens with the president. But then, there are so many things that are very quotable in here, but the things that really got me. Checks and balances. Remember, the president is not unitary. He's one of three co-equal branches. And that only happens if we press and get the other branches to do what they want. File our lawsuits. Press our Congress people. Go out and vote from the primaries till they're elected. So I don't care what millionaire or billionaire or PAC spends all that money. And when you send money in, you're not guaranteeing yourself that you're going to get the right person you want to vote at the end. So you can send $5 and say, well, it's just the primary. I'm going to vote in a big election. No, in that big election, you're only going to have the people who got through the primaries and ended up on the ticket. You want to be heard from the beginning. Otherwise, whatever you're donating to anybody's campaign, you're not doing them any favors. You're not doing yourself any favor. Get out and vote. So one of the things that really got me was in this opinion. Remember, it's an opinion. And remember, we've got a president who's derelict in his duties. There's so much he's not doing. He has acting secretaries. He has positions he hasn't filled. He's not doing his job. So a lot of what they discuss about how this might impinge on the president doing his job, this guy is doing whatever he wants. He's not doing his job. And by the way, even though the vice president is treated a little differently because we've had some crooked vice presidents, but he's there to replace the president. We don't have to worry if we go after a president because he's crooked or has done something wrong, because we have a vice president to replace him. Or if we find out that the president, vice president, lied to us all and they throw him in the cabinet out, the bottom line is, I'm running short of time because I did too much at the beginning end, but one thing I wanted to say was, it's arguable that it would be possible to indict a president but defer trial till he was out of office, without in the meantime unduly impeding the power to govern and the symbolization of his authority. But the memorandum nevertheless concluded, in light of the effect that an indictment would have on the operation and impeachment proceeding, this is what this opinion from the legal counsel of the Department of Justice said, an impeachment proceeding is the only appropriate way to deal with the president while in office. So think about what everybody's been arguing about Mueller. This opinion under the group he was serving under while he was doing his investigation said even if you've got proof to indict him, you can't. I would fight it, but that doesn't matter. He's working for that group. So what he's going to do, hopefully, is school us all and tell us what this said. Okay? So he is not unable to be indicted. And we do have a backup. And we have run our country in situations that have been worse than this. When we're in wartime and a president is injured or dying or whatever. That's Truman got in when Roosevelt went. We were in the middle of a war. So the president couldn't conduct his business. So again, crime, it's another quote I came up with reading this. Crime is an action, no matter the performer. So it doesn't matter what person did a president or anyone else. We've got to understand this. President is now subverting the rules and selling $3 to $8 billion arms to Saudi Arabia with it, killing people in Yemen. that everybody, including Republicans in Congress, have yelled about. Jerry on Facebook, did you see the